Have you ever caught a glimpse of someone across a crowded room and felt a jolt of recognition so powerful it seemed like fate? For Hermann Karlovich, a failing chocolate businessman in 1930s Berlin, this moment arrives on a hillside near Prague when he encounters Felix, a vagrant whom Hermann believes to be his exact double. The resemblance strikes him as nothing short of miraculous, a perfect reflection of himself in tramp's clothing. "When I realized the full extent of our likeness," Hermann tells us, "I experienced a feeling akin to ecstasy, as if the world had suddenly revealed its innermost secret to me alone." What makes this encounter particularly fascinating is Felix's indifference to their supposed resemblance. While Hermann is transfixed by what he perceives as identical features, the same nose, chin, even gestures, Felix merely sees Hermann as a potential source of money. This fundamental disparity creates the first crack in our narrator's reliability. When Felix casually pockets Hermann's silver pencil before departing, Hermann feels simultaneously violated and exhilarated, as if some profound connection has been established between them. The encounter haunts Hermann long after he returns to Berlin, infiltrating every aspect of his daily life. He finds himself studying his own reflection with renewed intensity, imagining Felix's face superimposed over his own in every reflective surface. "I would stare at myself in mirrors," he confesses, "and see not just my face, but the flawlessly pure image of my corpse." Hermann sees himself as an artist of deception rather than a murderer, viewing his plot as a masterpiece. For him, the true art of crime isn't hiding evidence, but creating a natural, logical progression where murder becomes just one link in the chain of perfect creation. This artistic self-image reveals his character. Rejecting conventional morality, he claims an artist feels no remorse and suggests Doyle missed an opportunity by not making Watson the murderer. His artistic pretensions mask inner emptiness. He describes his soul as vast but vacant, revealing a hollowness his schemes try to fill. Since childhood, when he lied as a nightingale sings, he has rewritten reality regardless of consequences. Most telling is Hermann's dismissal of God as a huge hoax invented by a scamp who had genius. He cannot accept being subordinate to anyone else's narrative. He must author his own story, even if it leads to destruction. Hermann's relationship with Lydia reveals his condescension. He catalogs her flaws, her superstitions, poor education, and limited knowledge of trees. He mocks her, devouring trashy books, skipping descriptions and retaining nothing, and examining them like a curious hen, sometimes upside down. Despite ridiculing her innocent dullness, bedroom giggles, and tasteless dressing, Hermann claims to love her, perhaps for her warm eyes or because she loved me so completely. To Lydia, Hermann embodies perfection. Intelligent, brave, well-dressed, his new dinner jacket once prompted an awestruck, "Oh, Hermann!" This dynamic, Hermann as superior, Lydia as adoring inferior, feeds his need for admiration while requiring minimal emotional investment. Their relationship lacks intimacy. During lovemaking, Hermann experiences a dissociation where he mentally sits in the parlor while physically present in bed. Hermann's manipulation culminates in fabricating a twin brother named Felix who plans suicide, a tale preparing Lydia to discover Hermann's body and collect insurance, revealing his disturbing sociopathy. Hermann's murder plan unfolds with what he believes is flawless precision. He lures Felix to a remote forest, dresses him in his own clothes, and shoots him in the back. The body, he assumes, will be identified as himself, allowing him to collect insurance money and assume Felix's identity. His obsessive preparations reveal both meticulous planning and delusional confidence. He maps forest paths, calculates escape routes, and manipulates everyone, sending an artist friend away, suggesting marital problems, and coaching Lydia on identifying his body. Herman's fatal flaw is that his perfect crime rests on a false premise. The resemblance between himself and Felix exists primarily in his imagination, a narcissistic projection. Throughout the novel, subtle clues reveal this truth. Felix never acknowledges their similarity, and Herman notes differences in their teeth, ears, and eye color. The devastating irony emerges when Herman learns authorities identified the victim as Felix rather than himself. Felix's walking stick becomes the symbol of Herman's failure. Have you ever stared at your reflection until your face seemed unfamiliar? Mirrors pervade despair as both literal objects and symbols of Herman's fractured identity. They appear at pivotal moments when Herman meets Felix, feels disoriented in hotel rooms, and grows a beard to hide me not so much from others as from my own self. This mirror obsession reveals Herman's fundamental uncertainty about identity. He experiences himself as both painter and model, reducing his spontaneity. This split consciousness enables him to mentally watch himself from across the room during intimate moments with Lydia. Felix represents the externalization of Herman's fractured self. By projecting his identity onto another person and murdering him, Herman attempts to resolve his internal division, yet becomes increasingly haunted by Felix afterward. When Herman adopts Felix's voice, "Since childhood I've loved violets and music, I was born at Zwickau," this identity slippage reveals his crumbling sense of self. In despair, we experience everything through Herman's distorted perspective, a man whose perception is warped by narcissism and delusion. He frequently interrupts his narrative to address readers or revise his account, highlighting the constructed nature of his reality. Herman's unreliability shows as he contradicts himself, admits to fabricating details, and questions his memory of conversations. He notes their literary quality, resembling Dostoevsky, creating a disorienting effect that undermines his credibility. His literary pretensions mirror his psychological state, as he criticizes narrative techniques while unwittingly employing them. He offers multiple chapter beginnings and comments on his writing with mixed grandiosity and insecurity. As Herman's mental state deteriorates, his narrative degenerates into fragmented, paranoid diary entries. We understand him not despite his unreliability, but because of it, his distortions revealing his disturbed psyche. Isn't it ironic that our grandest plans often collapse from the smallest oversights? In despair, Herman's perfect crime fails not through elaborate police work, but a basic error. Felix's walking stick left in the car. This grossest, drollest, tritest mistake demolishes his artistic pretensions and exposes his scheme's fundamental delusion. What Herman believed was artistic genius was merely pathological self-absorption. His masterpiece collapses because it was built on false premises. The supposed perfect resemblance existed primarily in his imagination. The walking stick perfectly symbolizes his failure, an object literally naming its owner, making mistaken identity impossible. Rather than accepting responsibility, Herman blames others. "You must be fools not to understand." He insists his achievement was perfect and any pseudo-mistakes were imposed by critics. Awaiting capture in a mountain village, Herman griefly fantasizes about escaping, wondering if this is all a dream from which he might awaken on a patch of grass near Prague, returning to where his descent began.